You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Welcome back to the Heartland Politics Show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and last week saw the historic trial in Chicago of former House Speaker, Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan, who's also former Democratic Party chairman. The trial came to an end, and Speaker Madigan was convicted on 10 of 23 counts involving corruption in Illinois. This is really important, not just in Illinois, but nationwide. Madigan was the longest serving speaker. His career had gone 50 some years in politics, and he became well known in recent years by being hit by Republican candidates and Democrats associated with Madigan. So really, really important verdict on Madigan and for the future of Illinois politics here. And to kind of break this down today, I'm really pleased to have as my guest Ray Long, who has been on our show here before. He's an investigative reporter with the Chicago Tribune, covers politics and government. An old friend of mine, going way back. The book that he wrote about Mike Madigan was called "The House That Madigan Built: The Record Run of Illinois' Velvet Hammer," and it's a good book to pick up and read now if you want some more context on this. Ray, thank you for taking the time today to be with me.
Great to be here with you again, Robin. Thank you.
Well, let's take our listeners through this. If you would, you covered this trial. Kind of go into some of the detail of the charges that he was convicted of, what exactly he did that broke the law in Illinois.
Well, there are two main areas that they found him guilty on. One is about ComEd, and ComEd is, of course, the big utility in the northern part of Illinois. And they had paid a $200 million fine and agreed in a what they call a deferred prosecution agreement back in July 2020 to cooperate in exchange for the feds dropping a bribery charge against them. Interestingly, that didn't come up in the trial, but the case really reflected what was brought up in the Madigan trial. And the thing that the jury seized upon, Robin, was that Madigan's allies, a couple of former aldermen, one who used to live right next door to him, a couple of precinct captains, and a guy who used to be on his legislative majority in the House, all were at various times getting stuffed into different lobbyists' payrolls, and they were not directly paid by ComEd. They went through third-party lobbyists, and so that concealed their payments. In other words, ComEd would pay a lobbyist, and then that lobbyist would send these payments to these Madigan pals, and these Madigan pals would not have to do much, if any, work. A lot of them appeared to be ghosts. And they their biggest challenge was to send in their invoice each month. So that was one thing that the jury seized on in bribery conspiracy and bribery counts against Madigan. Then there was a separate deal where there was an alderman, controversial here in Chicago, named Danny Solis. He was a government mole. The government had caught him in a sordid array of law-breaking that included prostitutes and Viagra pills and trading his public duties and public office and abilities to do things in exchange for that and campaign contributions. And so the feds caught him early on, and they turned him on both Michael Madigan and Alderman Ed Burke here. Burke was a 54-year city council icon, and he was in his own shakedown scheme, and Solis caught him. And then they also caught Madigan, and they had Madigan through Solis, working with Madigan, who was a property tax appeal lawyer, and Solis was alderman and chairman of the zoning committee. That was kind of an unholy alliance that the jury saw play out, and they convicted Madigan in that case of trying to find a state board appointment, probably a six-figure job for Solis once he retired from the aldermanic seat he had. And in exchange, Solis would keep working on trying to drum up business for Madigan's law firm. So that was the second kind of area that they found him guilty in. The jury did not find Madigan guilty on a couple of other areas. One was a big similar property tax exchange for Chinatown property here. He was alleged to have sent legislation along kind of behind the scenes that would have transferred property owned by the state in Chinatown, which was being used for a parking lot, to the city of Chicago, whereupon Solis, who you remember was the zoning chair, would have been able to zone that property for a developer to put a high rise. The allegations the prosecutors made amounted to, they believed that Madigan had worked on that so that he could eventually get property tax appeal business for his law firm. So it's convoluted, but it is why the jury deadlocked on that. And they did find him not guilty of a similar scheme to the ComEd one, where the prosecutors had accused Madigan of putting one of his pals onto an AT&T ghost job in exchange for working on legislation favorable to AT&T. So it was really a complicated and complex thing. Really, you know, Robin, I compared this to jurors coming in with little knowledge about the government or politics of Illinois, which is very complex, complicated, and wild and crazy at times, to somebody who hadn't actually seen a football game and suddenly being asked to referee the Super Bowl. It is that complex and layered and nuanced.
I'm aware of, and I'm sure this came up, and I know you're aware of it, the trial of the former governor of Virginia, Bob McDonnell, I think his name was, where he was acquitted of charges. And I know that there was speculation that what Madigan was doing was just the way things are done, normal politics, so to speak. And it sounds like in the first group of charges in which he was convicted, he tried to, it was like a quid pro quo where the utility got something, but they also then in exchange had to hire Madigan's people through several convoluted contracts. Is this just normal political deal making? I guess my question is this pretty close to making a crime out of normal political wheeling and dealing?
Well, that's what Madigan's folks were saying. I mean, that was their defense, that there was nothing wrong with this. And they said, they argued that Madigan really didn't know about any of these deals. They offered up various things that the jury later told us made them think that Madigan did know these deals were going on. And the it'll be interesting. I'm sure that when, I'm sure it's just a matter of when Madigan will appeal this case or seek to have it dismissed. I'm sure he will raise that McDonald case that you just mentioned, because a lot of people thought that McDonald had kind of crossed the line too. The thing that may be different on this is that they went through great gyrations here to mask the payments by funneling them through a third-party lobbyist and not having it show up on ComEd's books. So I think that is a key piece that the jury was able to latch onto when they came down with the guilty verdicts on this one.
I have to ask, I had a lot of discussions with people over the last several months, and just full disclosure, I did work for former Speaker Madigan back in 1987 as a staff aide. I was there less than a year, and I had worked with some of his people in campaigns, but the feeling was always that he's too smart to get caught.
Yeah.
If he was doing anything wrong, and I agree with you, the fact that they hid this shows that they kind of knew it was wrong. Were you surprised, Ray? I mean, you covered him, you wrote a book about him, that he allowed or slipped up or whatever here to be caught breaking the law the way he did.
Well, as you noted, legions of people would, who especially loyalists, would come out and say Madigan would never cross the line. He's above board. He's above reproach, and he's got a variety of checks and balances in place that would prevent him from ever crossing the line. However, you and I both know he was very secretive too, and so there were things that we could not see and could not know what were being done. He was not an open book by any means. And whether he did what he had always been doing, or whether he just pushed it over the line this time is really unknown here. The question is whether, if he does appeal, this will be upheld in the courts, which are kind of in motion right now as to what bribery is or not. And I'm sure they're going to be relying on some of the changes that were made just last year. The U.S. Supreme Court, in a case out of Indiana, basically cut into the bribery statute. They said that there was a mayor over there who had pushed through about $1 million contract for a couple of garbage trucks from a company. And then a few weeks later, he got a $13,000 consulting gig, which didn't come with a whole lot of things to do with that consulting gig. And the Supreme Court ruled that basically this came after the deal with the city for the garbage trucks. And it's just basically a gratuity. And they said that, therefore, it's not a bribe. Now, he's going back to trial on this. The prosecutors over there are taking another shot at it. But it is something that has really caused a lot of consternation over here with prosecutors. In fact, I think it became a problem for them when they were trying to make sure that they were getting all the jury instructions, which you and I know are the finer points that the jury is told before they go in and deliberate. And the judge had 100 pages of them in this prosecution. So that's, again, my Super Bowl analogy there. These folks had to take these events that probably sounded disgusting to the normal average run-of-day people who unexposed to Springfield, and at least distasteful, and then take those events, run it through 100 pages of jury instructions, and run them through the law and see what matches up. And so, you know, that kind of gets back to the question you asked earlier, and that was, did I think that that, you know, was I surprised with the verdict? I kind of thought there was enough there that if the jury wanted to lean on a guilty verdict, they could pull the trigger on everything. But I also thought that the Madigan folks, he'd spent $8 million on lawyers, and that's money from his campaign fund. And McLean's lawyer, who is a former federal prosecutor with a strong record too, I thought they threw enough spaghetti on the wall and raised enough questions that the jury could have found at least part of it not guilty. So, you know, I couldn't tell which one was which. You know, I wish I could have had a video in the jury room, but of course that is not allowed. But man, they spent 11 days going over this, yeah, and finally came up with these verdicts. And, you know, I tip my hat to people who were dedicated enough to sit through that and sort it out.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm really delighted to have today as my guest Ray Long, who's a political governmental reporter, investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune. I've known Ray going back to, I hate to say this, but the Dixon Mounds. We first met when you were with the Journal Star in the 1980s.
Yeah, that was quite a
Mounds controversy. But Ray's here. He wrote a book that I highly recommend folks read if they want to learn more about Illinois government, or maybe you don't want to learn, but it's good to know. The house that Madigan built, the record run of Illinois' Velvet Hammer. Ray's been talking a little bit about the historic conviction last week of former Speaker Madigan, former Democratic Party Chair Madigan, on 10 counts of bribery and just exposing the how government works in Illinois, and it's uncomfortable. I have to agree. I mean, the last question I talked to Ray about was, we talked a little bit about some of the details, and I was surprised the longer the jury stayed out that they convicted him. I thought that was a sign that they were going to, and they did not, just for our listeners, they did not convict him on all counts, as Ray had talked about. I want to switch the focus a little bit here. Madigan's been off the scene now for several years. You've got a new speaker. You've got a new Democratic Party chair. The Tribune just ran, you were part of an investigative series, our friend Rick Pearson was too, on corruption in Illinois government. It's not just Chicago, folks. It's downstate too. Is this just part of our political culture here? I know they've tried to do some reforms. It doesn't go nearly far enough. Will this change anything in government politics, do you think?
Well, I think that there are going to be some people who will stand up and cry, we need to do something. And the question is whether any of those will be in the legislature. And frankly, the governor. Will they push to close some of the loopholes and shut some of the escape hatches that really protect lawmakers or allow them to run up as close to the line as possible without crossing over? And really, in Illinois, the lines are so flexible that there's a lot they can do. And we have examples that we ran out. If you want to read it, I'll tell you, it's chicagotribune.com/corruption, chicagotribune.com/corruption. And, you know, just to give you a flavor, the federal investigation with Madigan, there were about 150 recordings, secret recordings done. But in Illinois, they have actually a law that bans the use of wiretaps in public corruption cases. So that is something that there was an Illinois Reform Commission under Pat Quinn 16 years ago after Blagojevich was arrested and impeached. And they recommended that Illinois have better recording laws so that prosecutors and law enforcement at the state and local level could have some of the tools that the feds have. And oddly enough, Robin, Lisa Madigan, who was attorney general then, was for that. And so it was Joe Burkett, who ran against her as attorney general candidate. He was the state's attorney of DuPage County, a Republican. And another interesting twist about this, Robin, that you will find amazing is that the judge, the federal judge in Mike Madigan's case here, was also working as a prosecutor with the Cook County State's Attorney at the time, 16 years ago, when those recommendations came out. And he recommended the same thing too. So you had the judge and Lisa Madigan, who sat in that trial and watched it unfold several days. And they had both come out in favor of the state and local authorities having more recording power, including wiretapping. And, you know, there's other things that we found too, like the state will say that these super PACs that come out and help out candidates but are not supposed to coordinate with them, there's a law in Illinois that says they can't coordinate, but they don't define coordination. And so when cases have gone to the State Board of Elections, they say, well, we can't rule on it because it doesn't define coordination. So there are big things and there are little things, and there are many things in between that could be shored up. And will it stop corruption in Illinois? No, you're right. There is a culture that's gone on and on and on in this state, but they could at least tighten the fence posts a little bit more so that there is less room to run.
This trial was really a primer, too, on how government politics works in Illinois. And I knew a lot of the people that had worked for Madigan, and it's sad. I mean, I think power, just holding power, and I would say the irony, too, last week of former Governor Blagojevich receiving a full pardon from President Trump while Madigan is convicted. It just something about the nature of power gets to people. I was talking to some friends last week, and I'd like to get your reaction to this. It seemed like the key moment here was when Lisa Madigan, we all assumed she, the daughter of Mike Madigan, all assumed she was being groomed to run for higher office. And then she was state senator, attorney general. And then as controversy about Mike Madigan increased, that would have been the time for him to step away when she would maybe run for governor or senator. It didn't happen, and then she got out of politics altogether. Is there a thought that was kind of a key moment there where maybe the power just overtook him, he just couldn't give it up?
Well, a lot of people have the same analysis that you do, that she could have been governor. And if he had stepped down, none of this would have happened to him. You know, he'd be like a graybeard that people would go back for, you know, deep thoughts on politics and things like that. But instead, he's potentially going to prison. And you're right about Blagojevich, man. That 16 years ago, when he was impeached, nobody would have thought that Blagojevich is completely pardoned and that Madigan would potentially be going to prison. Partly because of what you referenced earlier. A lot of people had built up this image of Madigan as a guy above reproach. And, you know, he got away with, I'm not going to say he got away, but he was unscathed in various investigations that popped up along the way. Nothing obviously as serious as this, and he never was charged with anything beforehand. But it is just mind-blowing to people who have watched politics and have seen how Blagojevich was an erratic governor and Madigan had to pull his chain to keep him under control a few times from doing, you know, stuff that could have really hurt the state.
We just got time for one more question here. We got a couple minutes. I think there's a strong assumption we all make that this case will be appealed. Is there any Can you speculate at all about a timeline? Will this go all the way to the Supreme Court? I think there's at least a chance of that this will drag out. Madigan's 82. Any thoughts on that, Ray?
First of all, he's a healthy 82. The guy is, you know, he's a fanatic about working out on a exercise machine and eating an apple for lunch. And that's kind of almost legendary, but it happens to be true. And I can't really make a good, solid judgment on what will happen next. He's got a forfeiture hearing that's coming up in May. The prosecutors have to decide whether they're going to come back and try to retry him on the hung jury counts. He was convicted of 10 out of 13 counts. So about half of those that he wasn't, I'm sorry, 10 out of 23 counts. I misspoke there. But
23.
And of the counts that he wasn't convicted of, about half he was not guilty, and about half he was deadlocked on. So the big one that they did not get him on was racketeering. And that would be basically saying that it was running a criminal enterprise. So they've got to decide, you know, whether to come back on that. The Madigan folks have to decide what and when to appeal. That usually doesn't happen until a sentencing date has not been set. So I babbled along here to your answer, but I guess, you know, it's still up in the air as to when all this is going to come to a head.
Yeah, this story isn't over by a long shot, I don't think.
Right, and, right.
I really hope that there's a second book in Ray Long's future where you cover all this, and the trial in itself would be worthy of a book. But I really appreciate you taking the time today, Ray. I know you're very busy with your responsibilities with the Trib, but this was an important topic for us in Illinois, but also across the nation. I think this story, it was very important. Ray Long's been our guest today on Heartland Politics. He's a reporter for the Chicago Tribune, somebody I've known for a long time, and a great reporter, old-time reporter, but the highest degree of integrity. He's also the author of an outstanding book called The House That Madigan Built, The Record Run of Illinois' Velvet Hammer. Ray, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Great, and thank you for bringing me on here, because, you know, this is a story that does resonate, and it will reverberate around Illinois politics for years. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Ray.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.